Good morning. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Buck, Sweet Cal B on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Make sure you download the Civic Media app wherever you get your apps. And listen to the incredible Todd Alba. He follows us right after the show from noon to 2 p.m. And then her debut week, Maggie Dawn, from 2 to 4 p.m. She is all across the Civic Media Radio Network every weekday now, Monday through Friday, from 2 to 4 p.m. As we do every Thursday at this time, delighted to have our friend and our colleague here, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, for a public service announcement. Good morning, Dr. Lyerly. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. I am at the Outagamie County Dems office, where Chris Alpheim just threw her hat into the ring for state senate. We are so excited. And I also found this book called See Jane Win.
Jane, you're an author.
I didn't want to say anything. I don't like to bring attention to myself.
Jane always wins. Jane is a big W. We all know it.
That's very exciting news about Chris Alpheim.
Chris Alpheim, Civic Media's own Chris Alpheim. Yes. So, I mean, we all know what a superstar she is. And just to know that she is... Hi, there she is.
I love when people talk about me.
Oh, we got to get you on the show.
Go Blue!
Go Blue. Absolutely. Thank you.
We got to get you on the show.
I'll be on the show. I'll absolutely be on the show.
Great.
We'll
make...
Turn down a microphone.
We'll make a reach. We'll make a reach after we get off the air. Well, that's very exciting news.
Oh, man. It's so exciting. There are so many good things happening in the world, and also so many really terrible things happening in the world. I was just talking with Senator Jeff Smith about all of this money that the governor has set aside for the hospitals in Western Wisconsin because, you know, they've just lost these two giant hospitals, all of this mental health care, they've lost it. And there's money there, but the GOP is blocking it. They can't use it to help the people who desperately need these services. And I just, how are these people in Western Wisconsin even getting by without these services that they were counting on?
Dr. Lyerly, what is the justification for this inaction? Is there any?
Well, apparently the story from the GOP is that they're concerned that this is going to be a handout to the big healthcare organizations. But what the governor and the leaders in the area know is that this money is for the benefit of the people who are no longer able to access fundamental healthcare services. This is devastating. This is our government in action, which is what we've seen from the GOP increasingly over the last 10 years, but especially now. I mean, it's February and they've stopped working.
Yeah.
This is a full-time legislature and they're done working for the year.
Well,
but we're not done having problems. We need help.
Kristen, working for two whole months in a row is exhausting. Our lawmakers need a break, you know, a little trip to Rio de Janeiro or something that rejuvenates so they can come back and do more nothing. It takes a lot out of you.
For the folks listening at home, Jane's being sarcastic.
We're going to give them a very long break come November,
yes.
Like an indefinite break.
They can go explore other avenues and find something else. Another big thing in the news, of course, and we talked about this a little bit, but the determination by the Alabama Supreme Court last week that frozen embryos are people is now having a lot of ramifications. And I'm sure you're not surprised. I don't think we're surprised. I don't think our listeners are surprised. This is not a popular decision. This is not a popular thing now that essentially this decision by the Alabama Supreme Court forced fertility clinics in Alabama to close.
Mm-hmm. This is an opportunity for education, because if you look at even some of the major GOP leaders who are calling for these giant abortion bans, Mike Pence's own children were born as the result of in vitro fertilization, IVF. Ron Johnson's grandchildren were born via IVF and a surrogate. So these people know that, and this information is out there. This information was published. I mean, they've done interviews about this, so this is not secret information. So these people know how complicated reproductive stories can be. And, you know, if you look at the actual process of IVF, You've got a sperm, you've got an egg. They come together and create a fertilized egg, but that's all it is at that point, is a fertilized egg.
Right.
There's a lot that has to happen before it actually turns into a viable human being. If this is not the same thing, and people who have supported IVF in the past, or maybe they themselves, 2% of babies in this country are born as a result of IVF. So maybe they themselves support IVF, but they're also aligned with the ideology on the other side. It's complicated, and it's an opportunity for those of us who understand it to have these sensitive conversations and help people truly recognize what this means, not only in their own lives, but on a much grander scale.
There was a college football coach who went on the record. He said, I am pro-life, I am pro-child, I am pro-family, I am a conservative Republican, and the Alabama courts need to take care of this. This is not right. Like, you see a lot of people coming out in favor of IVF for all the reasons you were saying, but unfortunately, these conservative politicians now are sort of fumbling the football down the field, and none better than Senator Tuberville, who just shanked it on the interview by saying, well, this is a bigger conversation. You are right. It is a bigger conversation, but that gives you no right to just walk away from the question itself.
Tommy Tuberville does not have any idea what he's voting on. Someone tells him, and that's what he does.
If you've seen that interview, it's hard to watch.
It is.
Because he's being asked a question that isn't that hard of a question.
No.
And he's answering it with an answer that's not related to the question repeatedly. He does not understand what this means. He does not understand what the impact is on people. These are people who want families.
Yeah.
These are people who are willing to go that extra mile, not just money, but all of the time and the effort and the physical piece of it and the mental health piece of it. Suffering from infertility is not a simple thing. So when I watched that interview, I thought, you are, having dealt with patients who are really struggling, and then to watch him as somebody who is making decisions for my patients, absolutely not.
Yeah. And absolutely not grasp the concept at all. He had no idea what he was talking about. He thought he was talking along the party lines. It was, we played the clip on Monday. Yeah. It's excruciatingly bad. We're going to play a little clip from CNN talking about some of the fallout from this decision and what's going to happen going forward. Calvin, play IVF Oops for me, please.
Lawmakers are terrified about this issue, so why?
Yeah, they have good reason to be terrified, John. I've been waiting for a poll on this. Pollsters just never even thought to ask the question, but now we finally do have one. All right, so this is a little bit of complicated of a polling wording, but frozen embryos are people, and those who destroy them are legally liable. Just 31% of Americans support that idea, essentially what the Alabama Supreme Court was finding. The vast majority, two-thirds, 66%, are opposed on this particular thing. It was not too much of a surprise to me, but even given this wording, which I think is a little complicated and may actually be better for the support side, it still only registers less than a third of support among Americans. The vast majority, 66% of them, are opposed.
What about a party breakdown here?
Yeah, what about party breakdown here? So Democrats overwhelmingly are opposed to this ruling. 82% of them are opposed, just 17% support. What's more interesting to me, this is not too surprising, is go over to the Republican side of the aisle, right? That Alabama Supreme Court leaning more conservative. Look at this GOP. The best that this can do is register essentially a 50-50 split with 49% support, 49% opposition. There are rarely issues in which you see Republicans and Democrats both sort of this close together, and this is to sort of points out how politically difficult this is for Republicans, where their own base is split. Democrats are overwhelmingly opposed, and the American public is overwhelmingly opposed.
Yeah, IVF seems.
That's a clip from CNN talking about IVF and the popularity or unpopularity of this decision by the Alabama Supreme Court, essentially saying frozen embryos are people and human. It's just maddening, Kristen. And you just mentioned several lawmakers who either are grandparents because of IVF or have children because of IVF. There was one lawmaker in particular who also is a mother because of IVF, a Republican, who voted against IVF. And yet we are hearing all of this rhetoric from one side saying, we need more babies. We got to have more babies. We need more workers. We need more people in the workforce. But now we're going to do this.
Yeah, it makes no sense. This isn't about babies. This isn't about families. This is entirely about control. I mean, if it was about babies and families, you would be encouraging people. You would be making sure that people had insurance coverage so that if they were suffering from infertility, they would be able to get access to IVF. And you can do that in Illinois, but in Wisconsin,
we can't.
We can't even pass postpartum Medicaid extension to make sure that our moms who have had babies have insurance coverage so that they can get the medical care that they need in the postpartum period. We are so far off base, especially in Wisconsin. And that's why we need to elect people who get it, people who live in the real world, people who listen to other people and understand what other people are going through, not hypocrites like Ron Johnson who benefit from IVF and then turn his back, pull up the drawbridge for other people who want the same kinds of services.
You know, you brought up the insurance component of that conversation. Paul, listening on WMDX, the 608, said, I'm a grandpa thanks to IVF. I helped pay the large cost for my daughter and her husband. While it was worth it, insurance should have covered it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, infertility is a medical condition. Just like mental health issues are medical conditions. Just like abnormal uterine bleeding is a medical condition. You should be able to go to your doctor, get the workup you need, get the treatment that you need so that you can live your life in a meaningful way.
Dr. Kristen Lierley is here, as she is every Thursday at this time, for a public cervix announcement. We will continue this conversation. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. We're coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network.
She gets mad and she starts to cry. She takes a swing, man. She can't hurt. She don't mean no. Just don't know what else to do about it. James says. James
Welcome to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Buck, Galvin, coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. We're joined by Dr. Kristen Lierley, as we are every Thursday at this time, for a public cervix announcement. And we've been talking about the decision by the Alabama Supreme Court to determine that frozen embryos are people and the ramifications of this. Now, the latest thing on this, Senator Tammy Duckworth, who has conceived through IVF, tried to get something passed to protect IVF, and of course, it failed. That was yesterday.
Senator Tammy Duckworth, who has two kids via IVF. This is a woman who has done tours of duty in Iraq. She is a veteran. She has lost parts of her body because of her service. She suffered from infertility, could be related to her service, and she was able to have a family because of IVF. And right behind her was Senator Tammy Baldwin, our own Senator Baldwin, in full support because, you know, Tammy Baldwin has been such a hero for healthcare, especially reproductive healthcare, since her tenure in Congress began. And there they sat thinking, this is a time, if ever there was a time when people are going to agree on something, on starting families, this is going to be it. And Jane, what happened?
Yeah, they voted against it. They voted against it. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, a Republican from Mississippi, opposing Tammy Duckworth's proposal, arguing it violates religious freedoms and overshoots protecting IVF to more sweeping and extreme genetic matters. Now, I do want to take that apart just a little bit, Dr. Lierley, because if you have an embryo that is frozen that you want to implant and you already know that it is, there are problems genetically and there are going to be problems with this, you are going to elect not to use that embryo. Is that correct?
This is a really important point. So sperm, egg, they come together. We've got a fertilized egg. That fertilized egg starts to divide. And it when it gets to a certain point, when it has a certain number of cells, it's a blastocyst. You can biopsy that blastocyst and test it for known genetic conditions. So say your family has a history of Huntington's disease, which is an autosomal dominant, like you have 50-50 chance of inheriting this down the line, and you don't know until you're in your 40s. It is really devastating for families. Maybe you want to know, like, does this embryo have this issue? If it does, then you probably don't want to implant this. You probably want to look for one that doesn't have this. So this is a way where you can choose the healthiest embryo
right.
to be implanted to give you the best option or the best opportunity to have a healthy pregnancy. What do you do, though, if you find that you've got, say, an embryo with trisomy 18, like Kate Cox in Texas had? If you have this life begins at conception mindset, do you then have to implant this flawed embryo knowing that it won't survive? So you're actually forcing someone to have a miscarriage or a traumatic, complicated pregnancy. Is that the intention here? Because that's what we're going to end up with if we require all of these embryos to be implanted.
I have a question, and I know this is going to come off sounding like I'm trying to be funny, and I promise you, I am not. If the legislation is thus that says that life is at conception at them, and they can somehow find a moment when it happens, the baby is born considered 9 months. I promise you, I'm not trying to be funny. Do they have to change laws based around age? Because if a child is life begins at 9 months, that means when they're born, they are 9 months under the law. Therefore, voting, driving, drinking, all those things come into play if that's how serious they are. Once again, I promise you, I'm not trying to be funny.
No, that's a great point, though. We don't actually know when conception happens. There's a window.
Yeah.
So, you know, women ovulate. The egg doesn't just go shooting into the fallopian tube. It falls into our body somewhere. And then our beautiful fallopian tubes with their fimbriated edges ends just like, you know, float around and they pull that egg in. And if there happen to be sperm around, that can occur. And it typically occurs in the tube. But it's like a 3 or 4 day window when this typically happens. So we don't know exactly when conception happens. But we do have legislation in Wisconsin, actually, based on date of conception or post-fertilization age. And it's not based in science.
No.
You know, we can measure an early embryo to determine its approximate gestational age. And we use that for medical purposes, but we don't know when conception actually happens.
Okay.
Well, and this also, and we just have a couple of minutes left, but for the, this is God's will, people. This is God's will. You got raped, you got pregnant. That's God's will. You want to have a child. You can't. That's God's will. You get cancer, you shouldn't get treated, in my estimation, because that's God's will.
Yeah.
And most importantly, if you have erectile dysfunction, apparently that's God's will, too.
Viagra's covered by insurance, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And it shouldn't be.
Yeah. Going back to the whole fertilization thing, I'd also like to point out.
Jane got spicy.
She did. So when fertilization occurs, not all of those fertilized eggs implant. Actually, a lot of them just pass through and people don't even know that fertilization has occurred. So what happens in that situation? Like if you have a late period, is that something that you could go after someone for because maybe it's a fertilized egg that just kind of passed through someone's system naturally?
That's a really frightening prospect. Mm-hmm. That's really,
yeah, that
really
happens all the time.
Yeah. That's a really frightening prospect. How much further they're going to take this. And again, as you said at the beginning, Dr. Lyerly, this isn't about loving life. This isn't about protecting life. This is about control. We have some state legislatures now that want to restrict women's ability to travel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which seems like that would be, I don't know, unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have doctors. There was just a big ProPublica article in Tennessee, doctors who are refusing to give chemotherapy to women because they're concerned that that could affect the fetus and then they could get in trouble. They're refusing to, like cardiologists are refusing to give an accurate assessment of what a person's heart condition is that could have an impact on their pregnancy because they're afraid that if they say she has heart failure and the risk of dying is 30% and she chooses to terminate, that it could come back to haunt them. I mean, these people are getting suboptimal medical care, not just in the reproductive arena, but everywhere else, because doctors are afraid. People are afraid to take care of women and pregnant people.
We're not done with this discussion. We are done with this discussion for now because we're running out of time. Dr. Kristen Lierley, if you ever have a question for Dr. Kristen, you can email it now. Easy email address. Send it to janesays@civicmedia.us. And any other concerns or questions or guests that you would like us to consider, email us again at janesays@civicmedia.us. Dr. Kristen Lierley, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much. Stay with us. News is next, coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a bad case of loving you. No pills gonna cure my ear. I got a bad case of loving you.
Hi, hello, and welcome back to the 1983 National Football League draft.
And with the first round pick,
John Elway, Jim Kelly.
Welcome back to the draft.
And with the first round pick.
Good morning, and welcome to Matinee on Air. Jane Matinee, Greg Bach. The Board Lord Calvin coming to you live from our studio in downtown Waukesha. Thanks for joining us. If you ever want to call and or text 855-75-CIVIC. We also had a texter ask for us to give the numbers.
Ah, yes.
His cell phone doesn't have the alphabet on it.
Huh.
And so he actually had to look up a picture of a cell phone with letters on the keys.
That's funny.
I know. So it's 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842 or 855-75-CIVIC. Some basketball action tonight. The Bucks at the Hornets, 5:30. You can catch the game on locally grown radio, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM, 97.5 FM. Or if you want to catch it on Oshkosh Air Support, WISS in Oshkosh, 1100 AM, 98.3 FM. Joining us, as he does every other Thursday, Acme Packing Company sports guru Paul Noonan is here. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Doing great.
So what's up with the Packers? What are we? What's the combine? What do I drive it? Where is it?
It's in Indianapolis, where it is. It actually might be moving in the near future. People like to bid on it. It's actually a big event. It gets huge ratings. People love it. I used to not like the combine, and now we get so many useful numbers out of it that I've actually grown to actually kind of love it. It's demeaning. It's kind of a meat market. Everybody gets weighed and has to stand around in their underwear and do drills.
Wait. They weigh them in public?
They do.
And people watch this?
Yeah. I'm not sure it is on TV, actually. You can usually see every drill, but
yeah.
Yes, it is. And this is the one where they run the 40-yard dash, and they do the vertical jump and the long jump, and they do like the shuttle run and a bunch of other drills, 40-yard dash.
We're watching gym class is what it is. We're just watching.
That's what it sounds like.
World-class gym class.
So, we get a lot of useful data out of this, and we've done a lot of studies as to what translates to which position and where you kind of have to be to, at a minimum, to be an NFL player. And the Packers care about this a lot. Since the Ted Thompson era, they have we've been able to sort of reverse engineer minimums at all the positions. So that Packers in particular tend to care about the three-cone drill and have for a very long time. But they have athletic minimums that they really do care about a lot, and a lot of teams do, and it's actually served them very well. The Packers are a team that focuses on extremely good athletes, and they tended not to stray out of that very frequently, especially in the first round where guys like Rashawn Gary is one of the most athletic players ever to play the position at edge rusher. Lucas Van Ness, last year's first-round pick, similarly, one of the greatest athletes ever to play the position. that is what they do. So if you want to know who the Packers are going to take, it's usually premium position, edge rusher, cornerback. They need safeties. It'll be safety this year if they go that route, offensive line, and guys who test in the upper 1% of their group. That's what they do.
I'm still reeling over the fact that they weigh them in public. I feel really badly for all of them now.
Really? They're really good shape guys who probably have zero problem taking their shirt off.
I suppose.
If it was a bunch of me's.
I mean, yeah. Really, are all these defensive linemen all rock hard? Come on.
No, they're not. And one of the guys the Packers will have on their radar because they need a run stopper in their new defense is T'Vondre Sweat. He's a defensive tackle from Texas.
What's his name?
T'Vondre Sweat. There's a lot of sweats in the NFL. It is a popular
the sweaty lap. League.
But he weighed in at 364 pounds, and you know, not rock hard. He's a big dude. He's a big frame. So you know, you get those guys too.
Paul Noonan is our guest. He writes for the Acme Packing Company and a number of other publications. Bucks again at the Hornets tonight. How are the Bucks doing now? Should we be freaking out? Should we be, I don't know, hopeful? Where should we be, Paul?
I think hopeful. And I, like, last time I was on here, I went out on a limb a little bit because they were starting to show some progress in their underlying stats, even though they were still getting killed most of the time. And they've won three games in a row now, like, post All-Star break. They seem to have implemented a new defensive scheme, which is better than what they were doing under Adrian Griffin, where they had no defensive scheme at all. And they've turned into one of the best defensive teams in the league, like kind of overnight, over like the last week and a half. They are now like the sixth best defense from the 26th best where they were with Griffin. They're doing the smart things they weren't doing. They're letting Brook Lopez be a rim protector again, dropping down and just block shots. They're doing that with Giannis as well. And they seem to have realized that they need Lillard's offense, but that he's a liability on defense, and they're starting to actually protect him and have smart rotations. So they seem to have figured this out, and it really now is just a matter of making sure you get to the playoffs in decent shape, save miles on your old guys, and you know, hopefully when the playoffs do roll around, you get Middleton back, and you can actually turn this into a bit of a juggernaut. And over the last, like, since the All-Star break, they've been kind of a juggernaut in small sample size. They have a really hard part of the schedule coming up, but they've looked tons better, and I'm actually very optimistic now that you actually have something and that coaching transition is going to pay off.
So is this Doc Rivers scheme kind of finally getting work made into a workable thing?
It is, yes. They're still offensively a little disjointed sometimes. Part of that's just that they are still banged up. But defensively, I think they're going to make themselves into a truly elite team, and that seems to be happening now.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah, that's great
stuff. It really
is.
I mean, Milwaukee would just go over the moon if they can get into the playoffs and bring another ring home. That would be great. But now we're worried about Damian Lillard. Should I have him over for dinner or what? What's going on with Dame?
Yeah, there was an interview with him where he said he basically doesn't go out in Milwaukee at all. He just goes home and watches TV and plays video games.
I'm going to tweet him right now, tell him to come to a show.
But he has teammates. Can he go out with some of his teammates?
One would think. I mean, maybe he just is a homebody who doesn't want to go out. But it seemed kind of like a sad interview reading between the lines there. So I hope Damian Lillard goes out and has fun sometime soon, especially given how he played in the All-Star game and just looked like he was having a great time out there and jacking up threes from half court. And we haven't really seen that guy on the court too much for the Bucks. So I think a night or two out might do him some good. And I hope, you know, Giannis is such a good ambassador for the city and whatnot. It would be nice if somebody actually did that. But, yeah, you know, not everybody is also best friends on the team.
Well, that's true. And I appreciate that. But there's a whole bunch of guys on that team. You would think that there would be somebody he could, you know, Come over for potluck or, I don't know, bring a dish to pass.
Just watch the combine.
Combine watching party.
That makes me sad for him. It does. What is his family situation, Paul?
So he does have family back in Portland.
In Portland.
Where he was previously playing. And by all accounts, they have not moved. I'm not sure he views this as a long-term thing, honestly, and that's probably smart of him. But, you know, and, you know, that may just be good progress of, you want to kind of stay closer to home when you've got family that's not in the same city.
Sure. Yeah. You best not be out clubbing while the wife and kids are in Portland. And I can certainly understand why you wouldn't want to disrupt, especially if you have kids who are in school and in athletics and things like that, to drag them halfway across the country for something that might be temporary.
For you to just be on the road half the year anyways.
For you to be gone. Yeah. So Paul Noonan is our guest. We are talking about all things sports. Brewers, Greg's thing. you love baseball.
I do. I love baseball. Baseball's back, baby. We lost to the Cubs, and that sucks. And we came in hard in that first game and then lost the next game. I mean, I just feel like this is a nice representation of where the Brewers are going to be. It's going to be rocky, choppy waters all season, getting used to each other, new players, new coach, still trying to shake off that Craig Council. Like, they had to play the Cubs for the first time.
Right.
And Pat Murphy was like, it was weird seeing him in that uniform.
I bet.
Paul, give me your thoughts. And are you heading out to spring training this year?
I don't think I'm going to make it, though. I might sneak out there for a game or two. Okay. Still up in the air. And, you know, wins and losses in spring training don't matter that much, especially this early. Like, you don't have a lot of the big guys playing yet. And the Brewers are definitely playing some games and futzing around with where they're going to play guys. So not a huge deal yet that they're, you know, actually losing games. But I do think it is kind of representative of where they're going to end up. They're just such a young team. They're going to have a super high variance.
Yeah.
And without Corbin Burnes and Brandon Woodruff, they resigned, which is nice, but he's not going to pitch for the vast majority of the season at all. I think that they're really going to be up and down because their pitching is going to be very taxed. Even if it's good, it's not going to be. Burnes and Woodruff were very good for giving them a rest, for going out there occasionally and going for 7 or 8 or 9 innings. And there's not a guy on the team who can do that right now. Their bullpen, I think, is going to really suffer for that, if nothing else. And they're going to have a week or two every now and then where just like there's the back end of the pen going out there repeatedly and struggling to actually close games out.
Is that, you know, that's the thing that, you know, I think there's a lot of people who might not watch baseball who, you know, there was times when the pitcher pitched all 9 innings, especially if they were going towards a no hitter, but like, nowadays, that's just not something you do. I mean, now we have combined no hitters that can go between 3 pitchers, and that's cool, but not as cool as it used to be. Do you see that teams, maybe even with the Brewers where we're at, but teams in general, have to widen their pitchers pool to do exactly what you said, to have enough people who can play and then rest, especially in our situation?
Yeah, and honestly, the Brewers have been kind of the kings of doing that over the last few years. They really do grind their bullpen. But usually every team's got that one or two guys to rest up. And baseball's cracked down on that. You used to be able to shuttle guys more freely between your AAA club and your big league club. And now they have sort of cracked down a little bit on that practice with some requirements of keeping guys up and pitcher limits and things like that. So, and the Brewers caused all that, by the way. The Brewers really did spam the Major League Baseball rules on shuttling guys between one place and another. And a lot of baseball rules over the last few years have been to crack down on things this Brewer specifically did.
Yes, it's very true.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. They really pushed the envelope on a lot of baseball rules. And now you can't do a lot of things like that. So the 3-batter minimum rule, that's because of the Brewers. Pitcher minimums, that's because of the Brewers. Like, a lot of it's because of the Brewers.
I feel like the whole extra innings, does that have anything to do with the Brewers pitch a player on second?
I don't think so,
but I feel like I heard someone say that. Okay, all right. I know that'd be ridiculous, but it's just such a ludicrous idea.
I got sick of people blowing out their bullpens in extra innings more than anything there.
Yeah, I still think it's a dumb rule.
I just find it so interesting that the Brewers were the ones pushing the can towards the edge of the table and then got their hand slapped.
We're the cats of baseball.
You used to be able to have call up anybody from your 40-man roster in September forever for in baseball. And now you can only call up, I think, 28 or 29. I forget what it exactly is. That is because the Brewers were just using that as a shelf to have a million pitchers come up.
Just a reminder again, the Bucks taking on the Hornets tonight. You can catch the game starting at 5:30 on locally grown radio, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM, 97.5 FM. And tonight at 5:30 on WISS Oshkosh Air Support, 1100 AM, 98.3 FM. He is with Acme Packing Company and writes for a number of publications. Our sports guru every other Thursday, Paul Noonan. Thank you so very much, Paul. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Stay with us when we return. An update on the Laughing Tap and remembering Richard Lewis. This is Matt and Air on Air coming to you across the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio in downtown Waukesha. You can always join us. Give us a call. Shoot us a text, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842.
It's a civic party.
It is a civic party. Or leave a message on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and or Twitter. I want to take a moment to remember comedian Richard Lewis.
Yes.
He was wonderful. I was a huge fan of his. Mm-hmm. And he died yesterday at the age of 76 after suffering a heart attack. He had been fighting Parkinson's disease.
I believe so, yes. Yeah.
For several years.
Yeah.
And announced a couple of years ago that he wasn't going to be making any more appearances, but he appeared for a long time with his longtime friend Larry David on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And as I was reading more about Richard Lewis, I read that they met at a camp when they were younger,
yes,
and they did not like each other at all.
Correct.
Yeah.
Which, shocking, Larry David not liking someone.
Or Larry David not being likable.
Yeah. I was actually just listening to a book called The Comedians by Cliff Nesteroff. He's written three great histories on comedy. And, yeah, he mentions that story. This is before, of course, Richard Lewis dies, but he mentions that story that, you know, growing up, they didn't like each other, but they found themselves in the same venues and
in the 70s.
Yeah, and then we're like, you.
I remember you.
And then they became really close friends.
And I again, looking for different clips yesterday of Richard Lewis, and he was interviewed about his appearances on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah.
And he said, I know exactly how to irritate Larry David.
Yeah.
I know exactly what to say that's going to push his buttons to get him to go off on a rant. And he said, and I'm fairly certain that's when he likes me the best, is when I tweak him to set him off on something.
Absolutely. And if you're not familiar with Richard Lewis's comedy, now we're going to play a clip in a moment, but it was the truest form of like neurotic,
yes,
New York,
yes,
like he lived in LA, but he was New York, Brooklyn in his blood. And it was just always not complaining, but like worries and
neuroses
and anxiety, yes, and therapy and my mother and just, yes, all these different things. And it was just, and he looked like a 1980s comic.
He was a gorgeous man.
Yeah, big
bushy hair.
Would wear like big pants. It's just wonderful. He's a legend. Calvin, can you please play that clip?
On the other hand, I'm psyched for them, I'm psyched for you, but I'm not psyched for me, because in 2 days I'll be flying to Jersey and see my mother's birthday. She wants me to say, all right, Mom, I'll say it. I'm 44. She says she's 41, which is good. But she's 41 next Tuesday. Actually, she's 135, because she had sex with one of the Wright brothers. I happen to know that. I'm just kidding, Mom. It's a joke. I'm a comic. She thinks I'm a dentist in Fort Lauderdale. It's a sad thing. But no, she's fabulous. She means harm, and I'm sure she's fabulous. I said, I'll come to the birthday, but I'm in L.A., 2,000 miles to Jersey. I was in Vegas doing a show, and I think it was at Caesars, or I really forget, quite frankly. But down in the little game room, they had this. It was $1,000, a hologram you can buy if you're having fights with your family. It's a hologram. They think you're at the birthday, and they can touch you, and yet you're not there. They touch you, and you're actually in your own bathtub at home or in Maui on a hammock. It's fabulous. And but see, I don't want to go because I know the whole family's going to be there, and they're too negative. And I'm trying to let go of that negativity. I mean, every family reunion, it's the same thing. When I was growing up, my mother would have like a toast at the opening of a reunion. You're killing your father. And then to a JR.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, Calvin.
Richard Lewis, who passed away yesterday at the age of 76 of a heart attack. He had been sober for decades.
Sober for decades, doing comedy since the late 70s.
And Jamie Lee Curtis, who he appeared with on the series Anything But Love.
Yes.
Through the 90s, really credits her sobriety to Richard Lewis. And I have seen several other actors and other people in entertainment giving him a lot of credit for how willing he was to help people in that struggle.
He was beloved in the comedy community. If you know your history, if you grew up at a certain time, Richard Lewis was just a comic. Like, even on, it was weird watching him on Anything But Love, because, mm-hmm, like, for me, I'd grown up watching him in the 80s and the early 90s, and he's on this show where I'm like, this is weird. But
his
stand-up translated to the character, and it was so incredibly funny. And Jamie Lee Curtis was, I mean, just fantastically,
yep,
funny. And, you know, it's one of those things where I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. I knew he was sick. I know he was older, but I was still upset when I found out. Just like Mel Brooks is knocking on 100.
I know.
When he dies, you may have to find a replacement co-host that day, because it's
going to
be hard for me. But yeah, Richard Lewis, RIP, you are sorely missed and you are completely loved.
Larry David wrote in a statement yesterday, he had that rare combination of being the funniest person and also the sweetest, but today he made me sob, and for that I'll never forgive him. So, Richard Lewis, may your memory be a blessing.
Yes.
Gone at the age of 76. All right, Laughing Tap.
Laughing Tap.
Show's coming up this weekend. You want to go laugh.
Actually, tonight we have a show called Laugh Track Cinema for $10. You come on out, and you're going to watch a movie on the screen, but we're going to have three people on the side doing commentary during the film.
Like Sci-Fi 3000?
Mystery Science Theater 3000, yes. So Matt Kempel is one of the co-owners of the club. My friend Amy Westrup. No, Dana Ehrman. Dana Ehrman's going to be there, and John Waldbauer, who's an improv comedian.
$10.
$10. Watch the movie. The bar is going to be there. I think the director and producer are going to be there. And Matt was actually in the movie.
Oh, fun.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. That's available tonight. Tickets are available at laughingtap.com. And then finally, Colm Terrell is coming one show Friday, two shows Saturday, $22 online, $25 at the door. No drink minimums. Come on down, buy tickets, laughingtap.com. Get your tickets at laughingtap.com.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us today. Thank you for listening and for calling and for texting. We have news coming up next, followed by Todd Alba from noon to 2, and then the incomparable Maggie Dawn from 2 to 4 p.m. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Stay here. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great day.